broken hands.
Let us begin. So, the last, what was the last thing we did? Anybody have any recollection? What was the last thing we did?
Yeah, we talked about the
The sequence of the okay, good. A week? A week's a long time. A lot can happen in a week. A lot can happen in a week. I've reached that point in the my two classes at Block that I'm not on the same page with them, and it's it. I have a few.
Okay.
Where are we up to? What was the last thing we did? Right. Absolutely. That's what we have now in both classes. Okay. So, the. Crossing the Jordan.
No, what are they talking about?
Sorry, I'm
going to stop. What are they talking about? I have no idea what they're talking about. I know what I'm talking about. We're talking about crossing the Jordan many, many, many years ago. The Navi, the end of class last week, I said that I would. The next issue that we have to address are all of the different reasons that the text gives us for why it was critical not only to cross the Jordan. They had to cross the Jordan. They had to get to the other side. It's like the chicken crossing the road. They truly did have to get to the other side. But more importantly, why was it necessary to cross the Jordan in such a dramatic fashion? Last I checked the Jordan, it was possible to wade across, let alone maybe swim. I'm not sure they needed to split it to get through. So what exactly was the agenda of this elaborate, miraculous, public display of crossing the Jordan? So here is an interesting exercise. If we go through the text again, if we go through the whole chapter, we see that the Navi tells us, in at least four different places, four different reasons for the same event. And that, we're going to explore them all, one by one, but just the fact that there's multiple explanations given in the same parak for the same event is actually a very important indication of something which we've seen many times, we will continue to see many times, but we don't always stop and address it. And that is that from a perspective of the Navi, or from a perspective of Tanakh, or a religious perspective, one event can have a multiplicity of layers of reasons, explanations, historical contexts. There isn't necessarily one reason for something to happen. And that's true with any event in history, that it can achieve multiple goals. In Tanakh, it's even more significant because those goals are defined by the Navi. And that's essentially what we have here. Give me 10 seconds. I'm going to turn the heat down. It's getting a little warm in here. Okay. So if we look at the beginning of Perek Gimel, from the very outset, starting with Pasuk Zion. Vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua, Hayom hazeh achel gadelcha be'enei kol Yisrael. From this day I will make you great in the eyes of Israel. Ashiyedun ki kasher hayiti Moshe eyeimach, so that all will know that just as I was with Moshe, I will be with you. And that's certainly one of the agendas for Kriyat Yam Suf, which was to link Yeshua to Moshe, to demonstrate that Yeshua begins. Yeah, what did I say? Same event. Same difference. No. Well, you can, but they achieve the parallel is there. But it's thank you. But the Kriyata Yarden actually set, the text even tells me that one of the sub agendas is to link Yoshua to Moshe, and to parallel Kriyat Yarden to Kriyat Yamsu. And we'll come back to that in a moment, but that from the outset certainly seems to be one of the sub-themes to what the purpose is, and to elevate Yoshua in the eyes of the people, and to compare him to Moshe. Moshe split the Yarden, Yoshua splits, and Moshe split the Yamsuf, Yoshua split the Yarden. And then, just two psukim later, beginning of from Pasuk Tet, Vayomer Yehoshua el Bnei Yisrael, when Yeshua relates this to the people, there's a slight twist. Vayomer Yehoshua, bizot teidun ki kel chai bekirbachem. Yeshua relates the same dialogue that he just had with God, Yeshua relates to the people, but with one twist. His declaration is, with this you will know, God said the same phrase, ashe yedun, the people should know. When God said it, it was the people should know that I am with you as I was with Moshe. When Yeshua says it to the people, it's with this you will know, ki kel chai bekirbachem, that God is with you. There's a living God with you, that there's a God of power is with you. Vareish yorish mipnechem et haknani, and he will remove the Canaanites from the land. Clearly, Yeshua is not going to tell the people, God just came to me and told me that we're going, that on this day, you will all know that God is with me like he was with Moshe. That's not the point. Yeshua is not going to relate that to the people. That's obviously for Yeshua to know. But the flip side of it is for the people to know, ki kel chai bekirbachem. So there's two agendas so far identified. One is for the people to understand, for Bnei Yisrael, to understand the relationship to kel chai bekirbachem. And two, for Bnei Yisrael to know, right, the relationship between, or the parallel between Yeshua and Moshe. Two explanations given for the purpose of Kriyat Yarden in the beginning of of Perek Gimel. Both of them related to Bnei Yisrael. One to elevate Moshe in the eyes, to elevate Yeshua in the eyes of the people, and the other is to elevate or to recognize the role of God in the conquest of Israel. Jump to the end of Perek Dalet, after the entire sequence of events are described. Starting from Pasuk Chaf Aleph. I like these Pasukim before Pesach, because there's a Pesach theme here. Vayomer Bnei Yisrael, after they come out of the yard and they take the 12 stones, they put them into some sort of a matzeva. Vayomer Bnei Yisrael, lemor, Asher yishalun b'nechem machar et avotam, lemor, ma ha'avanim ha'ele. We'll come back to the stones, but your children tomorrow will ask you, what are these stones for? Paralleling the number of passages in the Torah where the Torah talks about Yitziat Mitzrayim in the formula of when your children will ask you tomorrow, saying, which is how the story of the four sons at the Seder develops. That same formula appears here in the context of Kriyat Yarden. And you'll answer, Ashovish Hashem Lekechem et Meha Yarden Mipnechem Ad Ovrechem. You dried up the Yarden as you entered into the land of Israel. Kasher asa Hashem alkechem li yamsuf asher hovish mi panenu ad ovreinu, in parallel to Kriyat Yamsuf, clearly. For what purpose? Leman dat kol ameh haaretz et yad Hashem ki chazakahi, so that all of the nations of the earth should know that the hand of God is strong. Yad chazaka uvizroa netuya. It was the way we left Egypt. All the nations of the world should know ki yad Hashem Chazakahi. Laman yira'atem et Hashem Elokechem kol hayamim. Is that the same reason or a separate reason? Separate reason. So I have, in the end of Perek Dalet, two more reasons given. Both of them related to? One related to the nations, the other related to Yiratem, to you. Right? One to Amei Knan, and the other to Bnei Yisrael, back to Bnei Yisrael. Both of them related to Machar. Ki Yishalun Bnechem Machar. And your children will ask you, saying. So I have at the beginning of Perek Gimel two reasons defined immediately. V'zot teitun hayom achel gadelcha. Today I will elevate you in the eyes of the people. These two achievements are achieved immediately. The difference between the explanations given at the beginning of Perek Gimel and the end of Perek Dalet. Perek Gimel, God says to Yeshua, "Bizot teidun, hayom achel gadelcha." This is today. This is the immediate result. The immediate result is the people will recognize the parallel between you and Moshe. The immediate result is leman teidun ki kel chai bekirbacha. When you talk about Yira'atem et Hashem, you will achieve a state of reverence for God kol hayamim. That's a long-term achievement. That's not a single event. That's a long-term achievement. That's kish alun b'nechem machar. That's what will happen next tomorrow and the next generation as you retell the story generation after generation. L'man yira'atem et Hashem kol hayamim. And regarding Amei Knan, Leman, what was the expression? Leman dat kol amei haaretz. Leman dat kol amei haaretz. Ki yad Hashem chazakai. When we talk about yad chazaka, the immediate reference is to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And we're back to Yitzhak Mitzrayim theme. The nations of the world should know ki at Hashem ki chazakai. So I have four explanations given for Kriyat HaYarden, two immediate achievements, two long-term achievements. Immediate achievements vis-a-vis Bnei Yisrael, the long-term achievements vis-a-vis Amei Knaan as the ripple effect. Everybody's checked their phones. The moment one goes off, everybody checks theirs. Right?
You have to make an announcement at the beginning of the month.
Okay. Switch them off. Two immediate achievements vis-a-vis Bnei Yisrael. The long-term achievements are vis-a-vis Amei Knan and vis-a-vis Bnei Yisrael, except that a different group from Bnei Yisrael than the first two references. Perek Yom was talking about the generation that crosses the Yarden. Perek Dalet is talking about Yishalun Benechem Machar et Avotam, your children for generations to come. So I have at least four different explanations given for why we needed to cross the Arden in such a dramatic fashion. I will add two additional reasons to this discussion. We probably won't get to them today, or at least we won't get to both of them today. The two additional reasons that are not listed here are the obvious ones. One, why did the chicken cross the road?
Get to the other side.
So we have to talk about the size of the Yarden at that period of time, number one. And number two, the other issue, which is not addressed in these psukim, but is part of the text, which part of the parak, which is the story of the 12 stones. And what do they represent to, and what do we achieve in the story of the 12 stones? That's a separate subtopic, but I think it's related to ultimately why we crossed the Yarden in such a dramatic fashion. So let's start with this. I'm going to start actually, you may.
There's lots of comparisons there, but like in the grand scheme of things, Yom Tov gets much more attention than Yarden. I mean,
well, Chumash gets much more attention than Nach, in all fairness. Because Chumash is Torah, Torah is Mitzvah, and post Chumash is not. There's no Chag related to Kriyat HaYarden. There shouldn't be, because Chagim are related to Chumash and Torah. Post Moshe Rabbeinu, we're not going right. In Navi Rishay Lishchadesh Davar, you can't add Halacha post the world of Chumash. So it's significant.
It seems like a lot of effort is made to make the connection, you know.
Because for that generation, it was critical. And for us to understand the conquest of Canaan, it was critical. But there's no chag related to it, per se. The truth is that I have a theory that there is a chag related to entering into the land of Israel. It's a subject of a different discussion, but it's an irony. It's an oddity that there is no chag associated with the conquest of or the entrance to the land of Israel. When you consider the fact that that was the goal of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, and we have a chag for Yitzhak Mitzrayim, we have a chag for Matan Torah, we have a chag for a journey through the desert, right? You would think the climax, the culmination of it all, is entering into the land of Israel. Why is there no chag related to the entrance of the land of Israel? Right? No, it is the end. That's the goal. The goal was to leave Mitzrayim, get the Torah on the way, go through the desert, and enter into Eretz Yisrael. Those are the four steps. We have a chag for 3 out of 4. Well, okay.
We don't stay there.
Right? Fine. So we don't. And a lot of people don't keep the Torah either. That doesn't mean there isn't a chag for it. There should be a chag for it. So the truth is that I have a suspicion. It's a work in progress. I need to sort of research it a little bit. But I have a suspicion that there are in fact two chagim, one chag in particular, but possibly two, related to entering the land of Israel. Specifically, what I'm referring to is Shemitah and Yovel. Shemitah has a Shabbos theme to it. Yovel doesn't have a Shabbos theme to it. So the question becomes, what is the theme of Yovel? What is the message of Yovel? What's the context or the... So I have a... There's a lot of parallels between Yovel and Shavuos. 49 days, 49 years, Sfartim Lachem, Sfartim Talacha. There's a whole series of parallels between Yovel and Shavuos. I have a theory that Shavuos was the day when we received the Torah, and Yovel was the celebration of the day, essentially the process of receiving Eretz Yisrael. Because the Yovel is the year when all the land goes back to its original owners as it was essentially when they entered into the land of Israel. It's kind of like a snapshot of entering into the land. Dividing the land by tribe, this is what the land looks like, there's your snapshot. And every 50 years at the Yovel, the land goes back to that. So there's a certain commemoration or celebration, if you will, or acknowledgement of the process of entering into the land of Israel through the Yovel. That's a separate issue, but it's an interesting tidbit. For now, it's a tidbit. They'll develop into a shir, but for now, I leave it as a tidbit. Okay, let's start one by one. Let's start with this first one. L'man da'at kol ha'mei ha'aretz ki yad Hashem chazakahi. Et yad Hashem ki chazakahi. There's a number of phrases in here that are trigger phrases, meaning that if we're already paralleling Kriyat Yarden to Kriyat Yamsuf, or paralleling Yitziat Mitzrayim to entering into the land of Israel, it's not surprising to find key phrases that will draw the link. Clearest, the most obvious one being Yad Chazakah. That's one of the main themes of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Yad Chazakah v'zvah netuya. Et Yad Hashem ki Chazakahi. But even the phrase L'ma'an Da'at, there's a word here missing. L'ma'an Da'at kol ha'mei ha'aretz. In order that all the nations of the world should know. Even that phrase, L'ma'an Da'at, is a phrase reminiscent of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Because if I go back to the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim itself, go back to the dialogue between Moshe and Paro and the Makot, you find that there was an educational agenda built into the plagues themselves, and the educational agenda is articulated a number of times in Sefer Shemot, every time with the same phrase, L'man teda, ki ani Hashem bekerav haaretz, L'man teda, ki En Hashem en ke Hashem Elokeinu. Leman teda ki Lashem Aretz. Leman teda ki en ki kel chay bekir b'chem. You have that same phrase over and over again. Bezot teidun, leman teda, bezot teda. That links the process of Yitziat Mitzrayim as an educational agenda for Paro and for Mitzrayim. The same phrase that links the educational message of Kriyat Yarden as a message for the Amei Knan. And what is the message for Amei Knan? What's essentially the message to be conveyed to the nations of Knan?
That there's a God in control.
Okay, take it one step further.
Inherit the land.
Inherit the land, it's a euphemism for conquer the land. Right? The message is, put it in simple terms, get out of the way. There's a truck moving in. Don't want to get hit, move out of the way. It's a simple message. Yad Hashem ki chazakahi. When you talk about the entrance into the land of Israel and you compare it to the methodology by which we left Egypt, we'll just go back to the imagery of how we left Egypt. We didn't leave Egypt by walking up to Paro in the midstream and saying, it's been great, thank you for the wonderful stay in your land, thank you very much for your hospitality and for your lunch. We'll be seeing you now, we'll come back in a couple of years and say hello. We walked out of Egypt like a mat truck. At Yad Chazakah V'Zruah Netuyah. We walked out of Egypt with a lot of noise and a lot of fear. And what was the ultimate achievement of Kriyat HaYarden, of Kriyat Yamsuf? Again, I'm going to reverse both directions. What was the ultimate achievement of Kriyat Yamsuf? Actually, Egypt partially, but if you think about Kriyat Yamsuf, the focus on Kriyat Yamsuf was not the Egyptians. They said goodbye to the Egyptians a while ago. Mm-hmm. Why did they have to go back? Now, the whole process of Kriyat Yamsuf could have been avoided. The only reason they got to the Yamsuf was because God told them to go back, turn about face and pretend you're lost in the desert so Paro will come chasing after you. God orchestrates Kriyat Yamsuf. They don't have to get to the other side for Kriyat Yamsuf. Kriyat Yarden, they have to get to the other side. Yamsuf, they don't have to get to the other side. Egypt had let them go. They're finished. God tells them, no, turn around, go back, pretend you're lost. Pharaoh will come chasing after you. He orchestrates the whole thing so that you can have this great miracle of the Yamsuf. Why? What's it all about? What's its purpose? What was it to achieve? To whom? To show God's strength to
the people
of
to the Bnei Israel.
No, partially.
And the people Egypt. Around them.
Egypt. Which people around them? Egypt's finished. They're gone. They're out of Egypt. Canaan. They're going from Egypt to Canaan. They said, you know how long it takes to go from Egypt to Canaan? If you don't get stuck at Morocco for 40 years, you know how long it takes? By natural transition, 11 days. How do I know it says it takes 11 days? Because it says so. MapQuest, right. There was a time when if you went into MapQuest and you put in an address in England, it would tell you to swim across the Atlantic. Yeah. But they took that out. They took that out. I saw it. I was like, okay. They were having too much fun. That's right. Beginning of Sefer Devarim. Achadasa yom mechorev derech har Seir ad Kadesh Barnea. It's an 11-day journey from Har Chorev to Kadesh Barnea. Kadesh Barnea was the jumping point for the land of Israel to conquer from the south. That was where they sent the spies from. From Har Sinai to Kadesh Barnea was supposed to be an 11-day journey. That's what it says. Vahibar ba'im shana, and on the 40th year, that's the beginning of Sefer Devarim. There's a message there. It was supposed to take 11 days. It took 40 years. That's not God's fault. It was an 11-day journey. The process was supposed to be come out of Egypt, stop at High Sinai, pick up the Torah. 11 days later, you're at the land of Israel. What would have happened if we would have done that? We would have come on the heels a week and a half after Kriyat Yamsuf. We would have gone from the heels of Kriyat Yamsuf into the land of Israel. And the result would have been, turn to Parshat Bishalach, to the Shira. And in the Shira, it says explicitly what the agenda was. Chapter 15. Starting with verse 14, Pasuk Yudalid. You have it? Perek Tedvav, Pasuk Yudalid, 15:14. Shamu Amim Yirgazun. Nations heard and trembled. Chil Achaz Yoshvei Plashet. Fear embraced all of the inhabitants of Plashet, or Pleshet. What's Pleshet? Eretz Plishtim. Right, that part of the land that we weren't supposed to go through initially because there were too much potential war. Now, post Kriyat Yamsuf, Eretz Plishtim. Tipol, I skipped a line. Az Nifhalu Alufei Edom. Then the generals of Edom would Bahala, would be confounded. Ele Moav Yochazemu Ra'ad. The leaders, the kings of Moab, all the nations surrounding, Eretz Plishtim, Edom, Moab, Yochazemu Ra'ad, would be gripped with trembling, Chilu Ra'ada, Namogu Kol Yoshvei Knan, as the inhabitants of Knan would melt away. Tipol Aleihem Emata Vafachad, fear and dread would fall upon them, bigdol zro'acha yidmu ka'aven. As your hand is strong, they will be silenced like stone. Ad yavoam chasham, ad yavoam zuknita. Until this nation that you have acquired would pass through, tvi'eimo v'titta'eimo bahar nachalatcha. So you bring them and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance, the place of your abode, machon l'shivtacha fa'alta. The whole conclusion of Kriyat Yamsuf draws this picture of every nation in the ancient world from on the journey from Yamsuf to Eretz Yisrael. Edom, Moab, those are the nations in the south. Pleshet, where are they coming? Where are they entering the land from? They're entering the land from the south. So if you're down here, Kriyat Yamsuf, and you're coming in from the south, Edom, Moab, Pleshet, here are your nations in the south. They're all trembling because they are next in line. That's where they're headed. Kriyat Yamsuf created this enormous fear that gripped the entire Middle East. Imagine what would have happened had we had gone from Kriyat Yamsuf directly into the land of Israel. From Kriyat Yamsuf, within 11 days, we're at Kadesh Barnea. Within 11 days, we were at Kadesh Barnea and into Hebron within 2 weeks from Kriyat Yamsuf. You know what would have happened? We would have marched through the land of Israel from Hebron to the Golan in a span of, what, 6 days? It's been done before? Mm-hmm. What happened? What went wrong? Why didn't we get to Kadesh Barnea in 11 days? As it was, we didn't get to Kadesh Barnea for a year and a half. And then, when we sat at Kadesh Barnea, a year and a half later, we sent the spies in. So we all know what happened. We ended up 38 years later at the other side of the Yarden. What happened after Kriyat Yamsuf that took us a year and a half to get to Kadesh Barnea and then 40 years ultimately to get to the Yarden? What happened to that fear, that dread, that trepidation that gripped the Amekna? People start kvetching, but minimally. Mm-hmm. Yes, but I'm not sure even the delay is that far along. I think it happens earlier. So Chazal have a very interesting perspective on the delay. Because the events, the sequence of events as they take place from here, from Kriyat Yamsuf, in Peshat B'Shalach, is immediately the next piece. They come to Elim. There's no water to drink. They ask for water. They get a rock and a stream of water that comes from the rock. There's no food. They get man. And then, Vayavo Amalek, Vayilachem B'Refidim. Then there's a battle with Amalek. Amalek lives in the south. Amalek are nomads, so they travel. But they essentially live in the south. At the early by the time we come in from the south, Amalek is essentially together with Edom here in the south. So Amalek comes and attacks us down at near Har Sinai, near Choreh. What's the significance of the battle of Amalek? What's the significance of the battle with Amalek? Chazal describe it in terms of the phrase Asher Korcha Baderech, which literally means they happened along the way, and Chazal play the pun of the word Korcha from the word, which comes from the word Mikre, with the word Kar. It means they cooled you off, right? Remember the famous Rashi about they cooled you off like a boiling bathtub that Amalek jumped in and they got scalded, but in the end they cooled off the water for everybody else. What Chazal are really pointing to in the drush on Korcha, which is really a drush, because that's not the pshat of the word. The pshat of the word is it means they happened along the way. But what Chazal are pointing to is the very profound impact that the Battle of Amalek has. If you think about the Battle of Amalek, who won that battle? Nobody. It was a stalemate. The Battle of Amalek was a stalemate, which is really remarkable considering the fact that we just walked out of Egypt. We just split the Yam Suf. We walked out armed to the teeth. We're about to go in and conquer seven nations greater and stronger than we, with giants and the whole and walled cities, etc. Comes along a group of nomadic tribes. That's what Amalek are. They are a group of nomadic tribes. There's no nation. There's no king. There's no army. There's no. They don't have an identity. They don't have a place. They don't have a nation. They're nomads. They're nothing. Amalek that battle should have been over in 10 minutes. Instead, Vayizanev b'chad kol nechashalim acharecha, they're stealing women and children. They're kidnapping women and children. Call all the weak and stragglers behind you. Amalek was slave traders. That's what they were. That's where they earned their profession. We know this from the story of Amalek in Sefer Shmuel, when Amalek attacks David HaMelech's hometown and capture all the women and children of Tziklag and take them down to Egypt to sell them in the slave trade. And David has to go chasing after them to catch them. That's how they earned their living, from the slave trade of Egypt. That's essentially what Amalek did when they attacked. They tried to, Vayizanev v'chad kol nechashalim acharecha, they tailed, right, from the word zanav. They capture from behind, from the tail end, all of the weak and the stragglers. What were they going to do with the weak and the stragglers? Kill them? What would be the point? The point was to ship them back down to Egypt as slaves. They get the money, they get the prestige. We've returned Israelites to Egypt as slaves. So Yehoshua, but take a look at the Psukim. I'm in chapter 17, Pasuk Chet. Amalek came and fought them at Rephidim. Vayomer Moshe Yehoshua. You with me?
Wait.
Chapter 17, Pasuk Tet. Bishalach, yeah, I haven't moved from Bishalach. Vayavo Amalek v'yelachem em Yisrael b'Rephidim. Vayomer Moshe Yehoshua. Moshe says to Yehoshua, B'chal anu anashim, v'tzehi lachem b'Amalek. Go get big soldiers. They don't have an army yet. They don't have an army yet to lead you. Moshe has to say to Yehoshua, go find soldiers to wage war against Amalek. So who is Amalek fighting right now? They're not fighting soldiers. In modern terminology, we call that non-combatants. Right? Guerrilla warfare, terrorism, whatever you want to call it. So he says to Yehoshua, go and put together an army and fight Amalek. Machar Anochi nitzav al rosh hagiv'a umataha elokim biyadi. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill and with the staff of God in my hand. Vayas Yeshua kasher amar lo Moshe lilachem b'Amalek. Yeshua does. He goes down to fight Amalek. Moshe Aaron v'chur alu al rosh hagiv'a. Moshe Aaron and Chur go up to the top of the hill. Vayas kasher yarim Moshe gava v'gava Yisrael. So when Moshe lifts up his staff, Israel is victorious. So when he puts his hands down, Amalek is victorious. Moshe's hands are weak. They put stones under his hands to hold his hands up. And Aaron and Hur have to hold Moshe's hands up so that they can be victorious. And his hands have to remain there until sunset. And Yahushua and his people weakened Amalek by the sword. Two things to notice about this battle. And Chazal, that's the amazing part of Midrashei Chazal. I'll tell you a thesis that you'll hear from me many, many times. Chazal darshan psukim that are the least obvious psukim to darshan. Because the most obvious ones, they don't need to tell you. They assume the obvious ones you knew. When Chazal talk about Amalek cooling off the bathtub, Asher Kochab Aderech, that's a pasuk in Devarim, that's a pasuk in Parashat Ki Teitze, which talks about, in hindsight, 40 years later, the story of Amalek. And it's a play, it's a pun on the word Korcha. It's like going like this. Why didn't Chazal just say it here? Amalek cooled everybody off, and Amalek said, because here it's so obvious, they didn't need to tell us anything. Notice two things about these psukim. First of all, who wins this battle? Who wins the battle?
Well, they weaken them.
They weaken Amalek. So who won the battle?
Nobody.
Mm, okay. We escaped. We emerged. Who won the battle? Who won the War of 1812? Who won the War of 1812? Where are the American history teachers?
What war?
What war, right. See, 15 years in Canada, I know all about the War of 1812. I've been to all the forts where Canada won the war against the Americans. What? The French, right. The French fought from Canada, because Canada was French. Right. And who won the War of 1812? I grew up in America. I learned all the history books. We won the War of 1812. Well, the War of 1812 actually was a draw. It was a stalemate. Read all the history books in Canada. The War of 1812 was a striking victory for Canada, for the French. Right? It's all a question of who writes the history books, right? Vayachalosh Yoshua et Amalek v'tamol v'ficharev. We weakened Amalek, therefore we won. The great army of Israel, 600,000 soldiers armed to the teeth against a ragtag group of nomadic tribes. We weakened them. We won. Right? And Amalek, from their perspective, it was an outright victory. Is it any accident that God says to Moshe, immediately following, tell Yehoshua, this battle will be an eternal one? You will not rest until we destroy, utterly obliterate Amalek? K'tov zot zikaron ba'sefer v'sim bo'oznei Yehoshua, this you will write in the ears of you, write into a book, and give to Yehoshua, ki maho emche et zecher Amalek mitachat ha-shamayim. I will obliterate Amalek. Because right now, Amalek ran away from this battlefield claiming victory. After Kriyat Yamsuf, after Namogu Koyosh v'Knan, all the nations of Knan hearts are melting. Amalek walked away from this battle and claimed victory. We weakened them. They claimed victory. Think about the image for a moment. What did that do to the achievement of Kriyat Yamsuf? What did that do to the achievement, to the great achievement of Kriyat Yamsuf? All the nations of Canaan, Edom, Moab, Ammon, Canaan. Right? Where did Amalek go running to the moment they left the battlefield? No. They live in Edom. They go running right back to Edom and Moab and Canaan and Pleshet, to all the nations that were just trembling in fear from Kriyat Yamsuf. And they report on the battlefield. Now, how goes the battlefield? Well, we lost such a... But we achieved a striking victory against the Israelites. The great army of Israel, armed to the teeth, 600,000 soldiers with God on their side. We lost 12 men. And in the end, they won. The theological background to Amalek is a separate discussion. A very profound discussion, Parsha B'Shalach. It has to do with the immediate previous passage with the water and the fact that they came running for the water, and Israel and Israel didn't trust God. They would bring the water. There's a whole the Chazal Darshan on the pasuk Yata Yefi Agev V'lo Yarei Elokim, that it was you who didn't fear God and not them who didn't fear God. There's a whole theological background to it. But the political achievement of Amalek is unquestioned. We look at the battle of Amalek as a stalemate. In the context of the time and place and forces, a stalemate is a loss. Right, so that was essentially the question Ruthie had. Why did it? What was the theological background to why Amalek achieved so much? That's a much more complicated discussion. But certainly Amalek, that was what they wanted to achieve. They were prepared to make the sacrifice of whatever it would take to achieve some kind. If it wasn't a resounding, absolute, complete, and total obliteration type of victory, we lost. Any kind of stalemate, we lost. For Israel, 100%, and we'll see how demoralizing it was. We'll see in a second. That, but let me just show you another observation. That's the first observation. The ve'achalosh, we weakened them. It doesn't say we won. It says we weakened them. Partially. Ultimately, why it took them a year and a half to get to Kadesh Barnea, and then from Kadesh Barnea, the story of the spies we know. I'll show you something else that we read this parasha every year. I don't know if we pick up on. When Moshe says to Yoshua, Amalek attacks, and when there's three psukim or four psukim that focus our attention on the fact that the only time they ever actually win this battle is when Moshe's standing on the top of the hill with his hands up and the staff of God in his hands. At the end of the day, we won that battle. Ironically, it says we won that battle by the sword. By Achalosh Yoshua et Amalek Yicharev. We didn't win that battle by the sword. We won it by the staff. Right, Moshe's arms, but Moshe's arms are holding a staff. The Tziat Mitzrayim was all about Moshe's staff. When Moshe says, I hold my hands up, what does he say? Mateh ha'elokim biyadi. We won that battle by the staff, not by the sword. That's the irony of the declaration that we weaken them lefi charev. Should have said we weaken them lefi mateh. There's three psukim to emphasize that it was the hands of Moshe. And his hands were tired, and they had to be held up, and he had to hold them all day long. Right? Can you imagine what it takes to hold your hands up all day long? And he can't put his hands down, because if he puts his hands down, we start to lose the... Okay, think about the imbalance of it. We start to lose ground. Moshe's hands have to be in the air. The staff has to be there. Talk about the emotional, psychological role that the staff played. That's a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. V'chi edav shel Moshe osot mechama, and the hand's going to achieve war. So Chazal put it in terms of when Israel looks up to the heavens, they see the staff directs their focus to the heavens and they gain faith and they are able to win the battle. What Chazal is really pointing to is that this battle was won because Moshe's staff stood there. Right? They were looking up to Moshe's staff. They were looking for the miracle. Okay. And without Moshe's staff, who wins this battle? Amalek. Go back to the opening pasuk. There's a word we miss. And I do this exercise many times. We read this every single time. There's one word that we miss consistently. Vayomer Moshe Yoshua El Yoshua. Moshe says to Yoshua, B'chalanu anashim v'tzehi lachem ba'amalek. Go take soldiers and wage war against Amalek. I went back to the beginning of that paragraph. Pasuk Tet. And tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand. Machar? Machar. Tomorrow. Moshe, Yeshua, go gather your army together and go defend Israel against Amalek. Tomorrow, I go stand on top of the hill. And between now and tomorrow? Between now and tomorrow, Amalek perpetrated a bloodbath. Vayezanev b'chat kol ha'nechashelim acharecha, all those women and children and stragglers behind, who's defending them? Yoshua. Right? But until Moshe's staff goes onto the top of the mountain, who's winning the battle? Amalek. So all night long, at least 12 hours, if not 24 hours, before Moshe's staff gets up to the mountain, Amalek is perpetrating a bloodbath. So yes, we pushed them back. And yes, we defended ourselves. And yes, we achieved ultimately victory. But look at what cost. What was the cost of the opening days of the Yom Kippur War? Did we win the Yom Kippur War? We won the Yom Kippur War. Did we survive the tail? We won the Yom Kippur War. Right? But what loss? And I don't mean the loss of life. But what moral loss? What the demoralization cost it created? The Yom Kippur War created a crisis in Israel. A crisis of faith, a crisis of everything we had achieved in the Six-Day War. Everything we had achieved in the Six-Day War, 6 years later, blown out of the water. Yes, we held on to the land. But we're still paying the price today for the demoralization and for the political tidal wave of shift that was created over the Yom Kippur War, because in the opening days of the of the Yom Kippur War, they had the upper hand for 4 days, for 5 days, for a week. We pushed them back. But the price we paid till today, the momentum of the Six-Day War was lost. That's precisely what happened in Amalek. The momentum of Kriyat Yamsuf culminated, of Yetziat Mitzrayim, culminated in Kriyat Yamsuf. And in one day, when Amalek had the upper hand, until tomorrow when Moshe went up, climbed up the mountain, for that one day, all the momentum was lost. We won the war. No, we won the battle. We lost the war. Again, the why is a hard question to answer.
Maybe he was mad.
Maybe it was a function of that was his instructions. I don't know. It could be many factors. But I'm less concerned now by the why as much as the what. Look what happened. And then ask yourselves, is there any surprise that we didn't get to Kadesh Barnea in 11 days? It took us 7 weeks to get to Mamre HaSinai. It took us a year to get to Kadesh. And then 38 years to get to Ivra Yard. 38 years new generation. 38 years new resolve, new commitment, new leadership. And 38 years later, they're about to enter into the land of Israel, they have to turn the clock back. To turn the clock back, they start the process all over again from Kriyat Yamsuf. From that moment that it achieved the dread and the awe and the fear and the trepidation and the trembling of a Meknan, we turn the clock back. And that's, take a look in Yehoshua. Flip back to Yehoshua for a moment. I'll come back to your question in a second. But if you take a look at Yehoshua, in Perek Hey, literally the next psukim, Vayehi kishmoa kol malchei ha'emori asher be'ivra ha'yarden yama, when the Amorites on the west side of the Jordan heard, b'chol malchei ha'knani asher alayam, and all of the Canaanites living on the coast of the sea, how God dried out the Yarden until they crossed. Their hearts melted, and they no longer had any courage to stand up against Israel, which is exactly what we achieved after Kriyat Yamsuf. It took us 40 years to get back to where we were because of what Amalek had achieved. And do it again.
And then revisit it.
Yeah, and guess what? And guess what? And guess what we're going to do again after Kriyat Yamsuf? After Kriyat Yarden. We're going to make the same mistake we made at Amalek, with Amalek. Right? The next story after the fall of Yericho is the Battle of Ai. And we start with Amalek all over again. Yeah, you had a question, David? I don't know. So why is it that he says Machar?
Because
Is that your question? Why does he have to wait a day?
Well, maybe people are getting up there.
Yeah, I tell you, I have a different theory. I have a theory that it could be that it took a day to get up there. I have a different possible theory, and that is that it didn't take a day to get up there. It took a day to get back to the camp, because the Moshe and the Aaron are traveling 3 days in front of the rest of the camp of Israel. There's a three-day distance between Moshe and the rest of the camp. So Amalek strikes, Moshe's not there, Aaron's not there, the Aaron's not there. How do I know this? Okay. You want the whole Shiran? I see you want the whole Shiran B'Shalach. All right, fine. I'll give you the other piece of it. Go back to B'Shalach. No, they know right away, but it takes Moshe. Well, how does Moshe know anything? Right? How he knows is not a question. If you go back to the beginning of that perek, right? Shmot Yud Zayin. They travel from Midbar Sin from the beginning of the perek. They get to Refidim. And there's no water to drink. They argue with Moshe. They say, give us water, we shall drink. Moshe says, what are you fighting with me for? Don't test God. The people are thirsty. They complain to Moshe. What did you take us out of Egypt for? You're going to kill us with thirst. Moshe cries out to God. In another minute, they're going to stone me. What am I going to do with these people? So God says to Moshe, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe, avol lifnei ha'am, go walk before the people. Vekach itcha mizikney Yisrael, take with you from the elders of Israel." Why does he have to take the elders of Israel? Think about that question for a second. Why does he have to take the elders of Israel? Take the staff with which you smote the sea and take it with you. Behold, I will stand before you at the rock in Chorev. It will smite the rock. And the water will come forth, and you will drink. They ask him, Moshe le'enei ziknei Yisrael. Moshe performs this miracle in the eyes of the elders. Why doesn't he perform the miracle in the eyes of the people? Why did he take the elders with him? Why does he need witnesses? He has all of B'nai Yisrael as a witness. What does he need the zikenim for? So here's the optical illusion. We assume, here's the picture of the story. Here's B'nai Yisrael. Moshe walks in between, amidst the people, and he says, you see this rock? As he does at Mei Meriva, right? He says to them, Shimuna Hamorim, see this rock? Right? Hits the rock and outpours water. That's not what it says. Where is the camp of Israel? In Refidim. Where is the rock that Moshe is going to hit? In Chorev. You know what Chorev is? Har Sinai. They're not in the same place. Moshe is told to take the Zikanim and go to Har Sinai. And there hit the rock, and the water will flow like a spring from Har Sinai down to Refidim. So that they will know. Now, why couldn't the rock be in Refidim? Because everything's good. They're headed to Har Sinai. The whole story of Mamre Har Sinai is going to the whole revelation. And this is Har Elokim. So the rock, the miracle of the rock, is going to take place on the mountain from which they are ultimately going to get the Torah. And hence, by the way, the Medrash Chazal that compares water to Torah. Because the water came from Har Sinai first, then the Torah. But Moshe and the Zakenim are on Har Sinai. And the people are in Refidim. It's at least a day's journey. In the meantime, out in Refidim, Amalek attacks. And I don't think the timing is an accident. I think Amalek waited to attack until... Why did Amalek attack right then? A, the leadership is gone. B, why Dafka that moment? What did Moshe just bring them? What did Moshe just create for them? Water. In the desert, there's no water. You're a nomadic tribe. Suddenly there's a spring of water. They came along and said, the water's mine. So in the meantime, Bnei Yisrael is sitting in Mephidim drinking the water, and Amalek comes and steals the water and says, the water's mine. Moshe, Aaron, and the elders, Yoshua, and the Zkenim are all on High Sinai. So he runs to Yoshua and he says, run back to the people. Say, go. Where's Yoshua? He's with Moshe. He says to him, go. Go protect your people. In the meantime, I and my and Aaron and Hur, we will stand at the top of the Giv'ah. But they've got to get there. Moshe's a lot older than Yoshua. Yoshua can run back to the camp. Moshe will take a day to get back to the camp. They're all interconnected. So you ask the question, why was it separated? Separated because the people complained. And all the pieces of it connect one to the other. But the delay of a day is because they're not with the Bnei Israel. Moshe and Aaron and Hur and Yoshua and the Zkenim are all in High Sinai. The people are at Rephidim. You understand the... Okay, well, we had a shiur in B'Shalach today. It wasn't... Somehow these things just fly. I don't know. It wasn't my intention, but okay. Excuse me? Somewhere in Rephidim, some hill of the people over the battle, overlooking the battlefield, where the people can see. Okay. Yeah, we are not going to finish our next agenda today. I had wanted to get two or three of these pieces, but so far we didn't. I wasn't going to get to 5 and 6. In the meantime, I didn't get to 1, 2, and 4. All right. Bezvat Hashem. We will continue that discussion next week. Do we have class next week? Okay. Because 2 weeks before Pesach, but that's all right. Only at night, okay. By day, everybody has to work anyway. Fine. So we will continue. We'll play catch up a little bit. Okay.